Yeah, I'm not quite used to these things, as you might have guessed. Good morning. I'd first like to explain who we are and where we're coming from, and then I'll explain that statement I've put at the top. Samantha and I, we work for a small defence consultancy called NSC. We're based just outside the old Staff College in Cambly, so we're in the UK. We support a range of activities ranging from operational analysis, software development, you know, the usual sort of defence tasks. Critically, we support training events at lots of different levels. This might be individual training, so for instance, convoy duties back in the days of Iraq and operations like that, right up to big operational level exercises for the UK and some overseas governments. One of the key points is our staff is drawn from a mixture of software engineers, OAE, as you might imagine. The software engineers have to support exercises. As you might imagine, that gives them a slightly different bias on how they feel that the tools ought to be built. They get left holding the baby when they go wrong. So Sam is our lead systems engineer, and she's responsible for the development, the maintenance, and the sort of roadmaps for our main war game systems. I was a software engineer. These days, I basically build the simulation end of it, and I spend a lot of my time designing, writing, and supporting war games, both in the civil sphere and for the military. So today we're going to be talking about our experiences in supporting military and civil educational war games, particular reference to command and staff training. We're going to have a quick look at the technology that we use to help the students, look at how we work in XCOM, a couple of the lessons we picked up over the years, and then if we've got time, we'll have a quick look at some of the future concepts and developments that are coming in. So first I need to explain what we mean by command and control exercises. As I keep saying, they're used in both the military and the civil sphere, and actually once you get beyond the window dressing, they're pretty similar for both areas. They're used to teach and practice decision-making processes. So in effect, what we'll do is we'll set up a replica of a headquarters, as the guys might have to use for reality, staff it with members of the training audience, and then we give them a set of problems to solve. Basically, to draw the students into that thing, the situation needs to be dynamic, it needs to change, and critically, their decisions need to change the narrative, as we've been discussing over the last few days. This is in contrast to the way these exercises used to be run, where we had a static list of events that had all been carefully signed off by people, and things happened on the precise minute. One thing to give you an idea of the scale, our smaller exercises might have 20 or 30 students, the big ones have several hundred. So the purpose of the war game is to provide context for these staff activities. One of the points of that is the results from the simulation and the war game itself, they need to be credible, but they don't need to be that precise, and probably most importantly, they don't need to be reproducible. The whole point is because the students have been putting an input into it, the storyline, the events and things will change quite dynamically. Much like we would do with manual war games, these are turn-based exercises. So rather than people feeding in orders into a real-time battle that where everything's constantly changing, get them to put in a set of orders, batch them up, run them through the process, give them a new situation to assimilate, and then they go to work. And what we're trying to do is to get them thinking into a sort of OODA loop type process. Doing this real-time actually is much harder for them, so if we can take it, think of it like training wheels on a bicycle. The length of these turns and cycles determined by the size of the formation we're training and critically their internal battle rhythm processes. Again, to give you a rough idea, if we're doing a joint level exercise, they're putting in orders for 12, 24 hours worth of activity, and the tricky bit is they don't really see the results of their decisions until perhaps another 24 or 48 hours later. So they've got to get into this idea of thinking ahead and anticipating what's going to happen. One thing that I would say is to us, the war game, it's the whole experience that's shared both by the students and I think critically XCOM. They need to be within this story as well, or else they have a lot of trouble keeping up with the students and actually helping to channel what's going on. Once we know the kind of information that we're going to need to provide to the students, and I think critically when in the real world day they need it, then we can pick the appropriate tools and things to pass that information to them and the sort of dissemination things. And that's probably the first bit where I'd say information technology can really help us. So enhancing the student's experience, because as I keep saying, we need to be focused on their view of the world, not necessarily what the mechanics we need to run the system. Pretty much all major headquarters these days have some form of collaborative working environment. It's usually computerized, although it could well be bits of paper, government envelopes, as we used to do 20 years ago. But it's an absolutely integral part of how a headquarters operates. And it influences how the military staff, they store, process, and I keep saying, disseminate that information, both within internal cells and to the outside world. Therefore, we need to build a facsimile of this system. And actually, that's much simpler to do using a computer system than trying to use manual processes. So the first thing we need is communication tools. And
speed up.
Okay. This is why I've got a script rather than ad-libbing. Right, communication stuff, I'm sure you get that. Video, email. Critical point is real-world headquarters. They're probably not talking face-to-face that much as they're going up and down the command chains. They best get used to how to do this. Second thing, electronic library. Headquarters have massive amounts of paperwork. We need to adjust those to match the exercise scenario, simplify them in some cases, and we've given up printing the damn things out. Basically, we need to be changing the information to the last minute, and the sort of new generation of staff coming in, they're used to being able to do electronic searches to find information quickly. And lastly, common operating picture. Oops. Yay. Right. So, pretty much any headquarters these days, they will have an electronic map they're using. Fundamentally, digital map, we can zoom in, analyze it for pieces of information. A key thing is they need to be able to filter the information coming from the system. So location of forces, critical events. We also like to give them some kind of planning and annotation tools to help with their staff planning process. And as you can see across the bottom, a timeline so they can move back into events. Something that you don't necessarily get on the real systems that good, but it's very good from an educational point of view. One thing I would point out is you can use an electronic COP, these systems, with a manual war game, and we have done. In fact, we've done quite a lot. Personally, I prefer having a computer simulation to try and populate the data, because with the headquarters these days, there is just this tidal wave of information that they need to learn to deal with. And actually, it's much easier to get the hang of it on this than in the real world. One thing I would point out, we're always getting pressure. Why don't we use one of the real world systems instead of, you know, an emulated system? The real world systems, they're very expensive. We don't want to spend a couple of days trying to train someone to use a real piece of military equipment that they might not actually ever see in their career. And lastly, they're extremely difficult and expensive to run because of operational concerns. They often come with secrecy cravats and things like that. I'll stop there. I'll pass over to my colleague Sam, and she's going to take you through some of the simulation tools that we use.
Okay, so a quick explanation of XCON. Exercise Control, or XCON, is not just a place, it's a collection of, or it's an information system comprising of tools, processes, and people. Its primary function is to being responsible for the exercise and developing that product at a given point in a given time of day that will inform the trainee's decision cycle. In this system, it's the people that are the most important part of the system, or most important component. They understand the training objectives and they have the experience to know what challenges the students or trainees need to face in order to meet those training objectives. So the question really is, how can we enhance this system with technology without disrupting that human part of the system? The tools that we regularly use are a simulation engine to process those interactions. Could be a war game, it could be a manual simulation. We mostly use computerized, and I'll explain why. Operation analysis tools, these can sort of fill the gaps between things that the simulation doesn't answer or answer questions that the trainees are asking, requests for information. And the AR tools, and these are very important in terms of explaining what's going on in the simulation, and such that they can adjust their plans and understand exactly why did that happen based on the orders that I input. So in terms of simulation, well, obviously we can use manual wargaming as a perfectly valid way of running these exercises. So why computerize? Well, number one is the speed of calculation. Obviously, simulations or computers are very fast, very good at maths, makes them very good at calculating things such as line of sight across a very complex terrain or keeping track of huge amounts of logistics, very important if you've got a massive exercise with lots of entities. So it allows you to have much larger exercises and potentially high fidelity scenarios can be played out. Now, obviously, if you're running for one day, you may want to just do that manually. If you're running for a course of a couple of weeks, that's where the computerisation comes in. And the other benefit to that is that taking care of those mundane tasks will give the subject matter experts much more time to spend with the students. And if they do want to do that manual gaming, they can focus on the sort of complex little vignettes rather than having to worry about the general, how did this move to here and what was the outcome of this sort of combat. So number two, it's sometimes hard for a human to remain dispassionate and hence consistent. Computers aren't emotional, they just do as they're told, and you get that sort of repeatability. So we tend to find that can often be a benefit of using the computer rather than the human. The other thing computers are good at is bookkeeping. They can generate huge amounts of data, they're very good at storing it, they're very good at retrieving that data. This can provide a rich data set that can be used to create event reports, and it can be used for sort of post-exercise analysis, either directly after an event has occurred or later on when trying to look at how did the training go, how can we improve that in the future. A good simulation will ensure that the output is going to support SME and trainee queries, such as, why did that happen? You're going to pretty lose your credibility of your system pretty quickly if you wipe out a load of units and can't explain exactly why did that happen. Unfortunately, many legacy systems have a habit of outputting loads of data, not explaining exactly how that data kind of hooks together. And that has been a big problem, and that was a big problem in one of our major simulations. So we did spend quite a bit of time backfitting routines to try and output that data, but output it in a format that we can interrogate it and try to sort of determine what was happening in those sequences of events, such that when we ran a cycle, we could feed back to the SMEs, it happened because, and they could then make the decision as to whether, yep, that is acceptable, and feed that back to the students. Ideally, we ought to be building those sorts of routines in up front. It obviously can be an expense to the system if we suddenly want to kind of backfit those routines later. So if we are going to do it when we design the simulation and include the SMEs in that design process. I'll put my hand up to being a bit of a techie who has on occasion just output everything because I can, rather than actually thinking logically, what does the user want to see? I'm aware this might be a bit of a contentious point. Simulations are seen as being rather expensive, either to develop or to maintain. I'm not going to try and claim that's not the case for all simulations, particularly the sort of legacy monolithic ones. That is probably a true statement, but that doesn't have to be the case. Modern day simulation development is the trend is more for modularization. Let's split down lots of smaller models and use open interfaces to try and get those models to communicate. The benefit of that being that it's quick to add a new model, and it's quick to take a model out, replace it with a new one. And also you get the reuse, therefore it can be quicker to develop a new simulation if you take the core that's already been developed here and just add a few new things. Obviously with the legacy systems, it's not quite so straightforward. In our experience, we have two options. One is to leave it alone, stabilize the system, make sure that it doesn't fall over, and then effectively live with its limitations and use your subject matter experts in the exercise to adjudicate and get around those limitations. That can often be the safest and cheapest way to keep that simulation running. Obviously, if you do want to develop that simulation further, then it can be a good investment to re-engineer, create that modularization that will actually allow you to expand the simulation and maintain it cheaply. So you'll have an upfront cost to do that re-engineering, but that gives you a stable system that you can develop in the future and is much cheaper to do so. My next point is validation through use. Typically for educational war games, the validation comes through repeated use. Therefore, each exercise we run, we get feedback during and after the exercise, and as a result, we tweak the data, we tweak the algorithms, the simulation improves, next time we run, it's better. For analytical war games, that's less desirable, but the problem there is that trying to do a formal validation can obviously take a lot of people, it's very expensive, and we often find that trying to get the data for that is difficult. We question whether for educational war games, whether it needs to be valid. I've had plenty of occasions in exercises where the simulation has actually done the right thing, but in order to meet the training objectives, the ex-con comes along and adjudicates that, changes the outcome. If that's how we're going to run those exercises and we want that extra bit of control over the simulation, does the simulation need to be valid or does the simulation need to be good enough, present us with results and give us a mechanism to be able to adjust them using that SME expert? One of the other benefits of simulations can be seen as a downside, which I will cover, is the fact that they're often heavily data-driven. Now, the benefit of that data-driven is that we can actually reuse that simulation for different things by changing the data, but without having to have a software engineer come in and rewrite a whole load of new algorithms. The benefit of that also is, obviously, we can have with lots of different users, we end up creating a massive library of data, which can be really, really useful, and actually the more the simulation is used, the more chance you'll be able to then just take that off the shelf with its data set and use it. Clearly, the downside is the data prep. That can be a very time-consuming activity. Again, developers are guilty of putting everything in data, and as a result, we spend hours trying to put the data in. We don't understand the model, and as a result, the wrong data goes in, the model starts doing random things. Our approach to this is more in the design of the simulation. We need more input from the SMEs as to what should be data and what should just be inbuilt into the algorithm. We also need to build data editors, and this is, again, something that can be done to those legacy systems, which is to build those editors into the systems such that we can have easier ways to input that data and we can see the relationships between that data such that we don't make mistakes. And we can also build the tools that validate, make sure that you didn't put a minus one that results in all of your forces being wiped out, or worse still, results in your simulation crashing, which would be really bad. Lastly is the human in the loop. I think it's fair to say that many simulations are predominantly restricted to kinetic effects. We often have sort of poor representation of other operations, non-kinetic effects. We have introduced some operations other than war within at least one of our simulations. We did this fairly simplistically by giving areas of effect which then integrated with the core sort of movement and attrition and intelligence systems. Now this worked at a fairly basic level. The complexity comes with how many of those operations and whether you could define the data to control what the effect of those things is, and then when you have multiple effects, how they interrelate. These humanistic models are not very easy to sort of resolve down to simple algorithms. It becomes a data minefield. Now this is an area that many companies are still continuing to look at. It is recognised that while we can do small pockets of simulation, trying to bring the whole thing together and truly represent the real world is a very difficult challenge. The way we get around that is using that human in the loop. So we present the current situation as where all the troops are, the activities that are happening. We present visually, usually the sort of the map, what's going on, what operations are where, and it's very much the SME in the loop who assesses that and then decides, okay, shall we actually reduce the movement rate there, or should we change the attrition there, and what should the actual action be? And once we've had that, we provide sort of adjudication functionality which allows the SME to input those changes back into the situation before the student changes it, which brings me on to my next point, which is adjudication. We've all been there, the case where, well, my ship wouldn't have sailed into that marked minefield, even if I did order it to. Unfortunately, computers have a habit of not questioning the orders that are input and just processing what they were told to do. So mistakes happen. The computer will make mistakes, I'm sure, and the computer will not necessarily represent what you wanted to represent, and there's the overzealous ex-con or op-4 operator who just decided he wanted to win. These are all things that need to be dealt with in an educational setting, and the way we do that is through adjudication. For most of these, fog of war is the way to deal with them. We can usually find a historical account which will match the particular situation. That can be a good training point in itself, and it avoids us tampering too much with what's going on. Obviously, that doesn't always work. The other option is rollback. Where simulations can really help is that they'll allow you to store a situation, run a set of orders through, assess the outcome, roll the whole simulation back, make a minor tweak, run it again, see if that changes the outcome. This gives XCOM the ability to quickly replay events and make minor changes so that at the end the outcome is still is credible, but the sort of the order input and what the students will see at the end in terms of what orders went in and what came out will be credible. The other option is to override, run the simulation, make a few tweaks. This is a tricky one because making those few tweaks can be, you can be discovered if you don't, obviously. You know, you make a change, they'll ask, why wasn't that as effective? You have to make sure that you have a story to go with that. And the other option is just to run several cycles instead of one large one. That way you've got a chance to see what the results are going to be, catch up at the end. The main point here is only change what you really need to. You can have a series of very, very complex events and you need to pick into those. Am I all right on time for that?
No, we've gone. Yeah.
We've gone, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
We're in AA.
Okay, I'll try and go speed up. The OA tools is another very important area. These tend to be, they can provide quick and dirty answers. They can often fill in the gap in the simulation. We typically use tools like SDK, which can allow you to sort of plot satellite tracks so that the SME can adjust the intelligence picture. They can be manual, but obviously computerized allows you to do things quite quickly. The important thing about the OA tools is they don't make the decisions. The people make the decisions. The tools just help them arrive at those decisions. AAR tools, another important tool. They allow the debrief of the scenario, so that you can, again, pick into the events, find out what happened, use that for debrief and to teach specific points. Often, many simulations have those tools built in already, so visualization to see what's going on, bookmarks so that you can quickly mark a key event and use that in replay and talk about it. Media capture so that you can produce things for PowerPoint, and obviously the raw data output. Scoring and assessment tools can be done, but certainly in the war games that we do, it tends to be the SMEs that are the important part of the equation.
Sorry. Right, I'll jump through these last ones really, really quickly. Hopefully you'll understand most of this already. First thing we learned, hide the simulation engine from the training audience as much as possible. You've got SMEs, use those as the interface. A really good exercise. The students might not even know there's a computer simulation. Second point, don't model everything in the computer simulation, or you might use a mixture of tools. The real thing that tends to go wrong is we try and build a system that will deal with every eventuality. You've got humans, they're very adaptable, they can fill in those little gaps. Reducing the number of entities and the complexity of the data, I love making super sophisticated exercises, it usually gets in the way. So pare it down to the absolute minimum that you need to deliver the results, and again, use your SMEs to bulk things out if required. And as I keep saying, emulation of the systems, cheaper, quicker, usually less risky. And as we keep saying, technology is there to support the SMEs, not to replace them. I've got a whole set of things on future concepts. If you want to chat after, come and find us and we'll just give you an idea where we're going on those.
Excellent. And all the slides will be available on the website.